Leadership development exists because none of us are perfect, fully realized people. We all have room for growth in our lives and we need help along the way. Hi, and welcome to Developing Imperfect Leaders.
Because the last time I checked, we're not Jesus.
This podcast is a project of the Leadership Development Institute at Hope Community Church, intended to help you explore and grow your leadership skills for service both inside and outside the church. I'm your host, Paul Stiver, and I'm joined by my co-host and fellow LDI staff team members, Kaylin Larson.
Hi.
And Natty Severson.
Hello. We today also have a special guest with us, and this is just like an extra special guest because, first of all, you're our very first guest, and you're often talked about and to, but you never actually get a mic, so you've never had an opportunity to respond on air. So today joining us is our sound engineer, Austin Sego. But Austin isn't just a sound engineer. I mean, it's a big deal that he is so gifted at this, but he also is working toward a biblical counseling license and doing some different things where he is interested in starting a biblical counseling ministry. So we wanted to bring him in because he has some significant thoughts on today's topic. Austin grew up in the Midwest in Indiana.
Illinois.
Oh my gosh, how did I mess that up?
No, we should just
Peoria.
Making up his backstory now?
Yeah, he grew up and he only wore left shoes. No, that's not true. He wore all his shoes, I would assume. All the shoes? And then recently, but in his life, I would say, like, let me guess, 7 years ago, you moved to Minneapolis. Five, yes. And then pretty quickly after we moved here, found Hope. And then after attending Hope for not very long, decided to do our year one internship with LDI.
Boom.
Thinking this is going nowhere. He's just like, not going nowhere. Whoa. Like, it's the worst thing he's ever done. Hello. No, like, it wasn't like a vocational choice. It was more like, hey, I'm going to give God this year to work in my life and to do things, which is a super legitimate reason to do our year one internship.
Common.
Right? That's why most people take it. But God, of course, got the ministry bug inside Austin. It's like COVID.
Oh,
you caught the ministry COVID.
Mm-hmm. Great.
And now here he is in his third and final year of our internship. So
incredible.
Let's welcome Austin Sego.
Welcome, hey. Austin.
Should I just let the clap continue?
Yeah.
I mean, you can pipe one in too. You're the sound engineer, so decide.
You should do just
sound
like
we're in a big room with a lot of people.
Yeah, just a ton
Austin,
of applause.
Austin, any okay. I think it was a joke. I didn't think he meant for serious. Austin, give us a little bit about you quick.
A little bit about me. I usually sit behind the camera where you cannot see me or hear me, and I prefer it back there, but
thanks for being brave.
Little about me. I don't know. I feel like Natty covered the basics, but I think as far as like this topic goes, shame is something that's like affected my life a lot, and just having talked through this in like my LDI classes, I think I've learned a lot and been able to, since then, been able to counsel a lot of people through dealing with their shame. And so, that's, I don't know, just a really fun part of ministry is seeing God use kind of my like struggles that he has kind of healed me from or walked with me through and be able to walk with others through that. So, yeah, I don't know. That's kind of like what I like about counseling and why I'm a third year intern still focusing on that stuff. So
that's awesome.
Austin helps us teach some of our LDI classes now, particularly just last week taught a class on shame to the year one intern.
Oh, so timely.
Thanks for doing that.
That was to my benefit.
And you are married to Kara.
Oh, yeah.
Live in Minneapolis.
Yep.
You like coffee?
I do like
Austin
coffee.
Is a man of great taste when it comes to beverages and other things that you can have taste for.
He's a very refined palate. I would put him
in a refined
palate category. He can probably taste differences in things that I can't. Though Austin has officially made me the best coffee I've ever had in my life.
I would agree. You have very good like syrup. You make good syrup.
Oh yeah. It wasn't even the syrup. It was when we got that really, when I won that really high-end coffee and then you AeroPressed it and it was so good.
Yep. That's funny. I made syrup recently with the intention of sharing it with you guys. And then Karen, I just used it at home.
He's so sad.
Well, you can do it again. If you can do it once, you can do it again.
Yeah, that's great. True.
Well, there's no great way to transition into the topic of shame, but let's get into the leading question for today.
We have a would you rather, Paul. We're going to burn through it. Okay. We're going to go fast. Okay. But would you rather, it's a weekly would you rather, Austin. I mean, you've obviously been here for all the recordings, but we're just going to let you answer it. Just for the sake of time, you are going to answer this because I don't read it, because I've customized my would you rather just for you. So Austin, for the rest of your life, would you rather, and again, remember Austin is a coffee aficionado. This man researches which spoons he should get for his kitchen. Like he is deep in the weeds. We bought an espresso maker for LDI, another reason to do the internship. But Austin did all the research and basically sent me a spreadsheet by this stuff. And that's exactly what I did. So Austin, for the rest of your life, would you rather only be able to drink generic drip coffee every day? That'd be the only coffee you could drink, generic drip coffee, or you would have to audio edit one episode of this podcast every day for the rest of your life?
Probably edit this podcast.
Whoa,
I feel like part of the reason I love coffee is because of like the I don't know, the ritual of like doing all the things. That's, I mean, if it were about just like just drinking it, it's like, why don't you just get a machine and automate the whole thing? But yeah, the crappy coffee takes the fun out of it. So
all right,
I feel like our voice is that much that you would listen.
I mean, I am actually a regular listener of this podcast, even though I edit it. So I probably listen more than anyone else out there. Wow.
I would hope that there's not someone else out there surpassing.
Yeah.
It's like when you're on Spotify and you're like, I'm the top 0.5% listeners of yada yada.
You need to breathe.
Yeah, Kaylin is on probably need to breathe.
I was. I looked up my thing today.
Yeah, I'm not that for anything, but I aspire to be. I actually don't. All right. Sorry, Paul. Moving on.
All right. Well, let's get into it. Leading question this week. And Austin teased that we're digging into the topic of shame. Always a super lighthearted and fun little topic. So the question is, what is shame and why does it steal my joy? What is shame and why does it steal my joy? And I wanted a quick give. I call this a multifaceted definition of shame, and we're kind of going to chop it up and think through it a little bit. But the first thing, kind of from the biblical aspect of what shame is the exposed, vulnerable, alienated as a result of rejecting God and choosing sin. And so the first place we see that is in Genesis chapter 3, where the fall happens and human beings reject God and then are exposed. They feel alone, they feel alienated, and they try to cover themselves in their nakedness, and God actually seeks them out. And we could get into the rest of the Bible. We don't have time for that. But that's that kind of first side of things. Second is the idea of shame versus guilt. We talk about this a lot in LDI, which shame is the idea that I'm bad and guilt is the idea that what I did was bad. So kind of hear the contrast there. Shame says, I'm bad. There's something wrong with me. Whereas guilt says, what I did was wrong. Who I am is not necessarily wrong or bad in the sense that what I did was. And then third is there, just to kind of round out what shame can look like, a few things. Feelings of unworthiness. Feelings of kind of fundamental brokenness. Kind of feelings of persistent humiliation or like debasement. Like you're always kind of taking second, you're always kind of losing, you're always kind of down on yourself and kind of beating yourself up, kind of that idea. Anything we'd want to add to this kind of concept definition of shame?
I've got a quote that is from the same book as what we'll hear later in the episode, but Ed Welch kind of paints this picture. He's good at like painting a kind of connecting your emotion to the topic that he talks about, whether it's shame or depression or like any other counseling topic he writes about. And so he writes this: you are disgraced because you act less than human. You were treated as if you were less than human, or you are associated with something less than human, and there are witnesses. So I think that kind of like really draws you into one, not only is this a result of like our own personal sin, but we can be sinned against, and that shame can be something that comes from outside of us. And then, yeah, it goes back to that kind of exposed, vulnerable thing with that. There are witnesses. So, yeah, I think that's something I'd add.
Yeah, I love that. And that's from the book Shame Interrupted, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Ed Welch really does a great job in this book. It's one of those books that you could continue to read. It's very dense, so you might even read it in chunks as you try to assimilate it. But I good job on that definition, Paul. And I think that's a really great add. I love the idea of that being emotionally exposed, right? It's that it's that nakedness, right? Yeah. And it's not like Genesis 2 nakedness. It's Genesis 3 nakedness emotionally. It's just that you feel like I just got sent like naked into the Mall of America. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that would be horrible, right? It'd be just horrifying. And I don't mean that in a funny or fun way. I mean that in a horrifying way. That's how shame makes us feel on the inside. And it's like when people see me for everything I hate about myself or see me for all the gross or cruel or selfish things that I think in my head, right? Like it's that deep, deep sense of not being right with God. And I don't mean it in the sense of like being truly seen. Like when people say, I feel seen, like in a, culturally kind of now kind of way, that not that kind of scene, not a good scene. This is a bad scene. So I like it.
One word that I would add to like the exposed, vulnerable, alienated is even just like unlovable. And so like the shame has like hit you so hard that you just don't even feel worthy of love, whether that's people's love or God's love, or I mean, those would be the two things that are loving you in return. But I know like unlovable is the one word that like really resonates with me when I think about shame.
That's really good. Yeah. And as we get into this topic, we're actually going to do 2 weeks on this topic, and maybe we'll circle back to it even more. This is a 1 week of our Ministry 101 class, but it is a topic that comes up throughout the internship, throughout our program, because it just, everything that we've just talked through in that definition is hitting, I think, probably all of us in some way pretty close to home. And so that goes to into the leading question, why does shame steal our joy?
I can't imagine feeling joy amidst what we all just described. I mean, I don't want to like make it too simple, but I can't imagine anything all of us just said, feeling joy amidst those circumstances. It just is like a joy, like sponge, but yeah. Not like it. I don't know. Sponge maybe isn't the right word, but just sucks it away. Yeah.
Exposed, vulnerable, unlovable, alienated are not words of like positivity or happiness or joyful. And so it makes you feel like you don't deserve anything, including joy. So it's almost, yeah. You just don't feel like you deserve it.
And it might be different than the circumstances that we say like typically would steal my joy. Like I'm uncomfortable or like even in persecution, because you think about people who are facing extreme persecution and how God calls us to be joyful amidst some pretty horrific things. But shame just, it's a big liar. It tells you are something you are not. And so it's not just that you're experiencing bad things, it's that you feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can't accept God's love. And with the absence of God's love, we can't feel joy. Right, like God is the source of all joy. Like if the sun went out, we would not feel warmth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's different than circumstances that are negative. It's telling us that we can't be recipients of God's love and then no joy.
Wow. Yeah. All right, let's get into the quote of the week because we maybe transition to some good news. Hopefully we can find some good news as we think about this topic because it is that heavy. And it, like we said, it really is hitting close to home. It's stealing joy. So this week, and Austin alluded to it and quoted it, we're looking at Shame Interrupted, a Ministry 101 staple book. It's been in the program ever since I've been around it. Shame Interrupted by Ed Welch. He writes this. The character of God is the basis for our connection to Him, not our intrinsic worth. Self-worth, or anything we think would make us acceptable to God, would suit our pride, but it has the disturbing side effect of making the cross of Jesus Christ less valuable. If we have worth in ourselves, there is no reason to connect to the infinite worth of Jesus and receive what He has done for us. So if you feel unworthy of God's love, you can turn in one of two directions. You can turn inward, in which case you are looking for a little self-worth to bring to the Lord, and that is pride, or you can turn to him and discover that he has a heart for the unworthy. So as we get into this, what do you guys make of this quote?
Yeah, I think it's a really good depiction of like what's the solution or where, like, how do you move forward from this? And I think, yeah, the turning inward is certainly not going to bode well for you. And so it's like, yeah, go towards the one who can actually, or who has already, you know, kind of gone to the cross, despising the shame. Like he has worked towards making whatever that kind of shame narrative, that thing that you're believing about yourself, that's a lie. And he has made that like into, I'm stumbling over my words, but he's made it kind of worthless. And so our response can be to go to him. And an example of that in the Bible is Psalm 51, which is where David has been, well, he kind of essentially rapes Bathsheba and is confronted by Nathan the prophet. And so just one of those just examples of heinous, terrible sin. He, you know, then murders Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba. And so like he's done some pretty bad stuff. And but his response after being confronted and exposed for what he's done, he realizes, oh, I can't turn inward because like I really am just not. I can't solve this. And so Psalm 51, he like asked God, have mercy, cleanse me, like don't cast me out. Just it's a lot of this, like, please forgive me, God. And then near the end in verse 16 and 17, he says, for you will not delight in sacrifice or I would give it. You will not be pleased with a burnt offering. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, and a broken and contrite heart, O God, you will not despise. So there's kind of like in this book, there is a chapter on like how Jesus despised shame, how the Apostle Paul despised shame. And so the word despise there, I think, is pretty powerful in that Hebrews 12:2 says Jesus went to the cross despising the shame. And then David, even, you know, long before that, says like the opposite, like the thing he wouldn't despise is a broken and contrite heart, recognizing I have nothing. I am like nothing without you, God, and I need you. And so, yeah, I think that's a great response to shame.
I love that. You're talking about how there's a difference between a broken and contrite heart before the Lord and a heart filled with shame, right? Those are two different things, but I think from an outside perspective, they might feel different. Like you might feel less than, right? But a heart driven by shame tells us we're not good enough. We're not worth enough. And it almost, if we let it, it'll drive us away from God, right? It makes us turn inward. Or culture would tell us, find your strength inside of yourself, right? Like pull yourself up by the bootstraps, read all the self-help books you can get your hands on, and you'll feel okay eventually, right? But the gospel message says something quite different, right? God tells us, yeah, we have this broken and contrite heart. And this quote tells us, and that should drive us, and that can. And the gospel is about that, driving us toward God and saying, yes, I'm not enough, but God really is. So that's awesome. Thanks for that.
Yeah. And so that kind of is leading into this next conversation about this quote, which is and we've hit on it a little bit, why is the gospel the antidote to our shame? I just want to touch on a couple of things. Obviously, Austin, you talked about the cross. It is wild to think about. So in the beginning of the Bible, we see that God's our creator. And so we see that we have worth assigned by God simply because he has created us in his image, that we're worthy of dignity and that we have personhood because we're made in God's likeness. But then when we get to the cross, if we ever had a doubt about how much we matter to God, we just look at the cross, right? On the cross, we see the old line from How Deep the Father's Love for Us, the hymn, is that he should give his only son to make a wretch his treasure, right? Like, what does God think of me deep down? Oh, he gave his son for me. I mean, it quiets our arguments of that shame would want us to say of like, I have nothing to offer God. I don't matter to God. When I look at the cross, I have nothing but to say, but I must matter to God. And so shame would tell us You're not worthy of love. You're not worthy of dignity. You're not worthy of care. Your needs don't matter. But the cross of Christ shows us, no, you matter to God. You're loved, actually, despite what you've done. And all the areas you think you're unworthy, he's declared that you have been worthy of his grace. That's why Christ died for you. So our worth then is not based on our performance, but his. And so therefore, we don't need to turn inward. We actually turn outward to him.
I have, I think I was having at some point in my spiritual journey, having a hard time wrapping my head around that concept. Like that God, that Jesus's like worth gets transferred to me. Mm-hmm. Right. And somebody gave me the analogy of when you buy a house. So Paul, you just recently bought a new house, but you had to sell your old house mm-hmm. to get there. Right. And so she asked the question, and I can't remember if I was a homeowner or not. There's a fly buzzing around me. I'm just going to go ahead and talk about it and swat it away. Because why not? All right, back on topic. She made the question like, how do you know how much your house is worth? And when you intuitively ask somebody that question, what do they say? They say like, oh, well, now they'd say like, well, I'd go on Zillow and I'd type in my address and Zillow would tell me what my house is worth, right? Or maybe, because it was a long time ago, would have said like, well, I ask a realtor and they would give me an estimate on the worth of my house. And she said, actually, that's not true. You don't know how much something is worth until you sell it, because something is actually worth what somebody will pay for it. Mm. Right? So Paul, don't tell us what somebody sold your house for, but did you get more or less than you asked for it in this market? Probably more or right on the money, right?
It was like a couple mil. So it was like just a little over.
And that's why we're doing this podcast.
Like, yeah. So I'm actually going to sponsor the podcast for the rest of the
time. Oh, yeah, yeah. But
ridiculous.
But you suddenly you're like, maybe you got more than your house was worth. And you're like, whoa, my house is worth more than I thought it was. And then she flipped it and she's like, well, what did God pay for you? What did God pay for you?
Right.
And God paid Jesus for me. Like the price that I am worth is the life of God's only son. And that just like, if that doesn't sit with you, like for me, that's like, what are you worth? I'm not worth shame. I'm not worthless. I'm not unworthy of love. God says I am worth all. I am worth the death and the life and death of his son. And that's what I need to like wear as my like price tag, mm-hmm. right? Not what I think, not what my feelings tell me, because my feelings sometimes are going to tell me worthless, turd. It's our favorite word on the Bible or on the Bible, on the podcast.
Is it in the Bible?
This podcast is not the Bible, just so you guys know. Yeah. But worthless turd, my name tag might say a lot of days. That's how I might feel. But it actually says, you know, Jesus on it instead, my price tag.
The quote that came to mind for me is, because I was just thinking, why is the gospel the antidote? And it's just, we are fully known and seen by God. And so we are exposed, we are vulnerable before him, and yet he still moves toward us and he loves us. And Tim Keller talks about it this way. He says, the gospel is this: we are more sinful and flawed in ourselves than we ever dared believe. Yet at the very same time, we are more loved and accepted in Jesus Christ than we ever dared hope. And so just the thought of looking at the cross and realizing the depth of our shame, or not even our shame, but like the depth of our sin and how God knows that. And yet we are more loved and accepted in Christ than we ever dared hope is just, it's completely humbling to think mm-hmm. how like deep his love is, how mm-hmm. Yeah, it is humbling.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, just to like it just hit me as you were talking. Like the way that we know that is that Jesus actually in us, and you hit on this, despised the shame, but he actually was exposed. Mm-hmm. He hung vulnerable on the cross mm-hmm. so that we could have that sureness of knowledge, so that we could wear his name tag. That's unreal. All right, let's get into then a little bit of the practical conversation, our growing together segment. So again, the goal of this podcast is to help imperfect leaders to grow, every one of us, an imperfect leader. And so what are some practical things that you want to say to someone wrestling with shame?
So we kind of talked about like why the gospel is the antidote to shame. I think similar language is used by Brené Brown, who's like a psychological researcher. I apparently just stole Natty's quote. I think she doesn't speak from like a overtly Christian perspective, but I think what she says ties really well into what we're talking about today. And she says empathy is the antidote to shame. And I think that is more of the how on top of the why. Mm-hmm. The gospel is mm-hmm. the why, and the how is we can empathize with those around us and recognize, hey, I am there too. I've experienced this too. Shame is something that like literally everyone experiences as a result of living in this world marred by sin and death. And so method or thing to enact is empathy and being vulnerable and recognizing like I'm going to kind of walk down into this pit with you. And
you should add that video into the show notes.
Oh yeah. The
Brené Brown's empathy video.
Yeah.
The giraffe one. Or the weather stuck with the ladder.
Cartoon. Yeah.
Is that her cartoon or did somebody put that cartoon on top of her talk?
I don't know, but either way.
We can link it.
Link that video.
Yeah. So that paints a good picture of what it's like.
Yeah. To add to that, I had a couple of things. One was, and we've kind of just touched on it over and over, but internalize the gospel, right? Like get in on this, rehearse this. Like I wrote a note, this sounds weird, but like get the message of the gospel into the mitochondria of your cells.
Ooh.
It's a little storehouse, right? And the way to do that, a couple ways to do that would be go to church, get in a small group, maybe do an internship like ours, maybe, but also, yeah, just encounter the gospel. Another kind of in that line, the book of Ephesians, maybe in particular, just especially chapter one, but throughout the book, just hits you with identity statements, like what God thinks of you, what he's done for you, what you have in Christ, what Christ has done for you, what he thinks of you. And honestly, if you work through the book of Ephesians and just write down everything that could relate to your identity and how you think about yourself, the list grows to, I think it's over 50. It's unbelievable how many things that the Apostle Paul in that letter wants us to see what God thinks of us and what he's done for us. So that'd be another one, internalize that. And then the other one, tune in for next week's ep, where we're actually going to get into some of the narratives that we believe that are count as like shame narratives. But yeah, other thoughts on how do we kind of wrestle with shame?
I liked what Austin said of just like, you aren't alone. This was something that we all experienced living in a fallen and broken world. And so feel okay to admit it to other people, safe people that you would feel comfortable being exposed to or vulnerable with, because people want to know if you're feeling that way so that they can even just like help remind you of identity truths or help you see maybe what narratives you might be believing. Because we really cannot do this, like we can't fight shame by ourselves. We need others and God to come alongside us in that battle.
Yeah, I went a little different direction just because I think my kind of interaction with shame has like had a different, maybe like map than a lot of people. But I think there are people who are going to relate with this. If you would have asked me, you know, 20 years ago, if I struggled with shame, I would say no. But looking back on it, I can really see that I just buried some of those feelings in a lot of like, maybe like bravado or like confidence, right? I've always considered myself a pretty confident person. And so when I became a believer, I was really felt freed from guilt. But I would say like, oh no, I felt free from the power of guilt and shame when I became a believer. That was one of the motivations for me to come to Christ, was kind of freedom from that sense of guilt and shame. But I had to do some digging. You know, I had some stuff come up in my life that helped me to dig, forced me to dig. And I think once I started doing that, or I was in that place where I had to really examine it, then I could see that shame crop up. So if you're in that place where you're like listening to this podcast and you're like, I don't know. Shame's probably not a thing for me. It might not. God might have done a ton of work to do that. And you might have had like a really healthy family of origin that really instilled like good things in you, which praise God for that. but it also might be that it's buried beneath layers of confidence and different things that might take some time and work and thought to really dig to the bottom of and really find where those lies are kind of locked in about who you are. And so that's, I think, like a great bridge into next week's shame narrative, because we'll begin to talk about like, how do I even identify what shame is really doing in my life?
Well, that wraps up our conversation for today. But we want to keep connecting with you. So thank you for listening to the podcast. And if you like what you heard, be sure to follow our show and leave a review. We love connecting with our listeners. So if you have questions, comments, or topic ideas, please email us ldi@hopecc.com. LDI is a ministry of Hope Community Church based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We seek to develop leaders in their biblical thinking, Christ-like character, and ministry skills for service both inside and outside the church. We do this through internships, classes, seminars, and retreats. If you're interested in learning more about our internships or other opportunities, visit ldi.hopecc.com or email ldi@hopecc.com. Have a great week.